Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. This is part two of a four-part series. We're talking with Keith Hughes, the Director in Equity Research at SunTrust Robinson Humphrey. Do you have a feel for what's happening in the whole laminate category in terms of shifts of market share?
Well, I think there's no question that the patent rulings that Mohawk won, or Unilin won, has really put a halt on the slide in laminate prices, which has been going on for many, many years. And wasn't so much marking down the same product, but you just had a continued introduction at lower and lower price points down to where you can find laminate at retail for a dollar and under a square foot. The patent ruling, again, I think that halted that. It may improve again, decline again, when people find a way around that, which I guess they eventually will. But there's no question we've developed an industry with kind of a dumbbell look to it. You've got some very hot, or what's for laminate, high-end products that are really pushing the boundaries of what laminate has done. And then you've got the very low end, which is competing on price, and not a tremendous amount in the middle.
I see. I guess now a part of the Unilin organization is what had been Columbia Forest Products. They got three plants in the U.S., one in Malaysia?
I think that's right, yeah.
How's that going to change the world as we know it at Mohawk?
Well, it does a couple things. It puts Mohawk in the number two position in hardwood flooring, still well behind Bruce or the Armstrong businesses, but I think a solid number two. They really, before the transaction, Armstrong was number one, and there was a pack of three, four, five players who were all, you know, roughly in the same range. No question, Mohawk's buying this when it's struggling financially. I believe the business is losing money right now, and the hope is to cut costs there and then turn it around as the market improves. And you know, usually buying companies in times like this, when they're in distress, is a winning combination. But it's going to take some time before it comes back. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I'm not mistaken, I think Jeff Lorberbaum, chairman and CEO at Mohawk, said they were going to lose somewhere between $7 and $15 million in the first year.
That's right. And I think the good thing for Mohawk, Mohawk's an $8 billion company now. So they can easily stand to take a few losses if there's something a lot better that they can do with the business 2 to 3 years. And, you know, quite honestly, they've been criticized when they initially bought Daltile and Unilin for paying too much. Of course, I don't hear a lot of those critics nowadays.
Right.
But really, this transaction is more like the transactions that Mohawk and even Shaw had done back in the 90s when you would buy distressed assets.
Right.
And that's you know, it's a safer bet to doing that because it's really more of a cost as opposed to a revenue issue.
What had taken place at Columbia to get the operation in this position? I mean, they grew rapidly. They made a whole lot of acquisitions, and then this happened.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, there's not a lot of public information on them. No question, one of their biggest customers was Mohawk before this transaction. And so you could characterize at least part of this transaction as a defensive maneuver to keep their hardwood supplier in place.
Uh-huh.
Selling to Mohawk, you're not going to make a whole lot of money as a hardwood manufacturer. Beyond that, I'm not really sure, but it's obvious they were not in the best condition when the transaction occurred.
So then there's a lot of investment in the physical plant that they have to make here going forward.
Yeah, I think so. I think more than anything else, they need to expand the distribution of this product line to fill up capacity in the plants. Obviously, one of Columbia's problems was they had gotten to the point, whether through the market or problems of their own, they just had way more capacity than they had sales. And that's really that and just some good old-fashioned cost-cutting and improved efficiency is what's needed to turn this thing around.
So then just plugging this into the Mohawk sales organization, getting it exposed in areas where Columbia had not exposed it earlier is part of the solution right
there.
No,
I think no question, yeah.
I see. How long is it going to take for them to assimilate this into the whole Mohawk operation, do you think?
It's going to come in varying degrees. I wouldn't expect it to be a major contributor to the bottom line until, part of the answer to that question is our answer to our housing question earlier, but, 09, 010, something along those lines.
I see.
I think next year you might see it deliver some profits. I mean, Mohawk, it's interesting. They've done these transactions before. Remember when they bought Crown Crafts? It's been, about 10 years ago,
right.
I guess. That was really struggling financially. I mean, they turned that one around in a hurry to get it to making money and to build off of there. So they've done this before. They had a better market then than what they're dealing with in hardwood floors.
I guess there's nobody in this industry that's made anywhere near the amount of acquisitions that that Mohawk has.
I don't know if you added Shaw up. I don't know the answer.
It just seems
to that.
Like it's an awful lot since way back when
they've both
started.
Done a lot over time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, both the companies, you can look around in a lot of different sectors, even in the flooring sector, Armstrong, classic example, of where acquisitions have been just nightmares. Can't really say that at Mohawk and Shaw. Most of theirs have worked, at least from what we can tell. And of course, Shaw had been the public eye in several years. But most of them have worked at least reasonably well, and some very well.
Do you think now, with Columbia under their belt at Mohawk, that they're still in the hardwood acquisition mode?
It's hard to know. I mean, they've obviously separated themselves from the pack a little bit. They're still not number one by a long stretch. So if there's a brand out there that fits, you could argue that they might want to do that. And obviously the best brand in the industry is Bruce and hardwoods. But you would pause a little bit before you would go buy something, given that you've already invested some money in that segment. But I don't think it totally precludes them. It really could go either way.
Well, I guess they would need something more at the high end, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Looking at Unilin as a whole and the laminate sector in particular, what are your expectations going forward in terms of sales there, given the situation you described in the housing market and the remodeling market?
I'm sorry, for Unilin?
Unilin, yeah.
Well, you got to remember about 80% or something around that of Unilin's businesses in Europe.
Yeah.
And so Unilin is much more a Europe story for the next 2 years than it is a U.S. story. Now, with the addition of Columbia, that changes a little bit. Columbia is going to be part of the Unilin organization, managed by the U.S. manager. But really, it's a European story until then. I mean, I think that the growth here is probably not sustainable in the double digits long term. But I do think it's one that could settle down to mid to high single digits. And what they've done as well as anything is on margins. But part of the story is back to the intellectual property story you asked earlier. It's very high margin business. And, it's not going away anytime soon.
And they're still closing deals in that arena.
I think so. Yeah.
I gotcha. Look at the Mohawk sector. I guess that was one that didn't do all that well. What, their sales were off, by some 10%?
Yeah, I think that's probably what the units were, or something close to it. As the industry really has recorded four quarters of unit declines in the high single digits to 10%, something like that. Probably one of the worst four-quarter periods in terms of year-over-year declines in the history of the industry, or at least as long as most people in the industry have been alive, let's put it that way. you do in carpet and in the Mohawk segment go up against easy comparisons. Really the interesting thing on Mohawk is, as good as Daltile and Unilin have been, the real delta on their earnings moving forward is how the Mohawk segment does. If you could ever get carpet volumes to pick back up, and particularly if you could ever get any relief on raw materials, the incremental add from the Mohawk segment, just getting back to kind of average margins and average volume level, would be tremendous to the company. But that's not a short-term story. I mean, there's still a tremendous amount of pressure on that business.
So you're not expecting anything positive for the rest of this year?
I think they've got inventory down on carpet to a reasonable level. So if you see any little pickup in business, could help, and you might run the machines a little harder to just keep inventory in place, as opposed to the pull down you've been doing for the first half of this year. So that would help, but that's only going to take you so far.
Now, there have been increases in raw materials costs during the
second quarter, yeah.
And that resulted in some price increases. What are you hearing about those increases out in the marketplace?
I mean, they were put through. I'm sure nobody was happy about it. But the reality is crude tobacco above 70 again. It's amazing that this industry, both the raw materials as well as the carpet companies, were able to put through a price increase in what's got to be one of the worst environments in many, many decades. If this had been 10, 12 years ago, literally, if you look at what's happened over the last 2 to 3 years, if this has happened in the early 90s, the entire industry may be unprofitable, and you might see companies actually going bankrupt. That's how far, it's not great, but that's how far you've come.
Yeah, it has changed quite a bit. Now, as you mentioned, crude is up, I think, it was up last week north of 78.
Right.
And what does that mean? We're likely to see some more increases?
Well, it depends on what benzene does. Benzene had gotten up to over $4 a gallon. Benzene's one of the, it's really kind of the bottleneck going from a barrel of crude to a pellet of nylon. It has actually moved down to the 350 range as we speak, but we'll have to see what the impact of crude going to 78 does on that. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go up. I think we've been a little spoiled over the last couple of years just thinking that raw materials for carpet companies move absolutely in lockstep with crude moving up. But the crude increases have been so extreme that that's been the case. That's historically not the case, except in very big swings up and swings down. Having said all that, we'll have to see. We'll have to see how this impacts benzene over the next 60, 90 days.
I see. This is going to wind up part two of a four-part conversation with Keith Hughes, the Director and Equity Research at SunTrust Robinson Humphrey. We'll air the third part of this conversation tomorrow. You're listening to Floor Radio.